From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1911 in Philadelphia, when a house of worship was built for the First Church of Christ Scientists. The building would turn out to be a kind of marvel of design, simple, classic, with echoes of early Christian spaces like the Santa Sabina in Rome. But now fast forward to 1996. The University of Pennsylvania buys the building as part of a large-scale community investment plan. But there are debates going on about what to do with it, and it's the kind of debate we've heard here in Rochester and in towns like Geneva and the Finger Lakes. You take a historic space, preserve it, and create what? Well, maybe a restaurant, maybe retail outlets, shopping. Well, in 1998, community leaders in Philadelphia said there should be a different focus in that beautiful space. They advocated for the creation of a community arts initiative. But that would take some convincing, because whether it's Philadelphia or Rochester or really any American city, there's a debate over whether art can spark economic development and social change. In West Philadelphia, they gave art a chance, starting with the free all-ages jazz concert, and it has grown tremendously in the 20 years since. That space is known as the Rotunda, and it hosts 300 events a year: spoken word, live music, film, theater, visual art, dance, and youth programs. And by almost any measure, it's been a success. That has the Community Design Center of Rochester wondering, what might happen in Rochester that could evoke some of the same impact? What's already happening, perhaps? We have the neighborhood of the arts, sure, but what else? What's the role of arts in revitalizing communities? The CDC is getting ready to launch its 2017 Reshaping Rochester series. The series comes with the call for more civic engagement from all of us, and this new season of events is titled Our City, Ourselves, Loving Where We Live. Their first event focuses on how to bring the arts to where they are needed the most, just as West Philadelphia did two decades ago. So let me welcome my guests for the hour. Maria Fergiuelli is here. She's Interim Executive Director of the Community Design Center of Rochester. Maria, welcome back.
Thank you, Evan.
Helen Hogan is here. She's a marketing and communications specialist and going to be talking to us about a number of interesting things happening here in Rochester. Helen, welcome to you.
Thank you, Evan.
And on the line with us is Gina Renzi, who is the executive director of the Rotunda and director of the 40th Street Artist in Residence Program, known as Airspace. Gina, welcome. Thanks for taking the time for the program.
Thanks for having me.
Gina, I'll start with you because, you know, I'm reading up on the history and watching all the many videos and looking at the beautiful space at the Rotunda. But I guess we go back a couple of decades and, you know, West Philadelphia, Rochester, a lot of communities have to make decisions on how to use space. Why do you think the arts is the choice that eventually was made there about 20 years ago?
Well, so the programming model that we follow now was really created by undergrad students at the University of Pennsylvania. They were in an urban studies seminar, and they were talking about how Penn, University of Pennsylvania, could work with surrounding neighborhoods and, you know, kind of cut down that town-gown relationship that so many universities have. And it was really these students, you know, these people in their teens and 20s who said, you know, how about some arts events? And at the same time, they were looking at what was going on around campus, and there weren't really a lot of opportunities for students themselves to socialize unless it was either part of a very specific, you know, cultural club or sports group or something like that, or a fraternity or sorority. So it was kind of, these students who created this initiative. But at the same time, there was a lot going on at the university. They were looking at their role in the neighborhood and the city. They were looking at you know, what they had done in the past, which, you know, it has very checkered history in the community, using eminent domain and things like that to expand their campus. So they were really trying to figure out what they could do to sort of address some of that and have a better face in the community. So they helped create a school in the neighborhood. They created an employee home purchasing program, minority and women-led business contracts, you know, all sorts of things. So this really was an initiative that was at the right place at the right time. And we had an administration at Penn who was very sympathetic to all ideas and, you know, thinking outside the box, as it were. And here we are.
And if you check out therotunda.org and jump on YouTube, there's all kinds of videos that show the events that happen on a yearly basis there. You get a lot of people and a lot of energy in that place, at least on some of the events I've seen. What's the capacity? What are the big events at the Rotunda hold?
So one thing that you might not be able to tell from the website is that we actually have two spaces in the building. It's a large building. It's something like 10,000 square feet. And as you said, it used to be a Christian Science church. It actually was put on the Philadelphia Register of Historic Spaces in 2013. It has the sanctuary, the old sanctuary space. That's the larger space. And then it has what we just refer to as the back space, and that used to be the Sunday school and the meeting hall. So they have different capacities. The sanctuary is just this sort of open plan, very large, cavernous kind of space that works well for visual things and for dance and things like that, but has an echo that really makes dialogue difficult. So we've had, you know, crowds of 500 people in there. We've had video shoots with 10 people in there. You know, it really varies. The backspace is where most of the programming happens, and that is open to 350 people standing or 125 seated. And again, it's an open plan kind of space. So we have, you know, we can have events with tables and chairs and have a, you know, community dinner. We can have plays, concerts, film screenings, classes, you know, whatever we can fit into that space, we fit into that space. And we get about 16,000 people visiting every year.
Wow. Talking to Gina Renzi, the executive director of the Rotunda in West Philadelphia. And in a minute, you're going to hear about when you can meet Gina and hear sort of the outline of the whole season of the Reshaping Rochester series for 2017 from the Community Design Center. Gina, I just want to ask you, I don't know how long you've been executive director there, but do you understanding going back 20 years when the community was making a decision on what to do with this space, were there naysayers? Were there people who said, look, this is a chance to create something really special in this space that should be retail or sales driven or, you know, a restaurant? I mean, were there sort of competing voices on this? Were there naysayers about the arts?
So I've been the executive director for 13 years. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't around in the very beginning, but I've gone through transcripts of trustees meetings at Penn and things like that to try to, you know, educate myself. And luckily there are a lot of people who either, you know, live in the neighborhood, local arts people, activists, people like that, and, you know, who have been here for a long time. There are some people at the university who have been here for, you know, 30 years that I consult. And my understanding is at the time there really weren't naysayers. You know, the university bought this building in 1995, late 1995, and didn't really have a plan for it. So the truth is that when they bought it, they basically bought it because who else would buy a huge building literally across the street from a university campus? And they knew they would do something with it eventually. And then there were some plans here and there, mostly from classes at the university, but nothing huge. And years later, there were some developers who came by and said, hey, you know, how about we put a retail space here? How about we put in a restaurant? And really, I think the university supports what we do so much so that they've said, no, I don't think those plans sound so great. And, you know, and we're still here, you know, and we have commitment from the university that our programming is safe. And that's a really important thing.
Gina is leading off the series when it comes to the 2017 Reshaping Rochester series. The first event, Maria, is when?
Oh, it's coming up next Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, and all of our evening lectures are held at the Gleason Works Auditorium on University.
All right, next Wednesday evening, so a week from tonight, 7 p.m. at Gleason Works, and you can get tickets now and jump online, not only check out information on this event, but the entire season. The website is what, Maria?
It is www.cdcrochester.org.
And when you think about what Gina is telling us about what has happened in this space, it's really cool looking. It makes me want to go to Philadelphia just to see the space. It's really beautiful looking
space.
Come
on down.
Yeah. Maria, what does that make you think of in our own community? Does it make you think of possibilities here? Are there any particular spaces it evokes for you? Does it make you sort of think more broadly about just the impact of arts in different possible spaces here? What does it make you think of?
I think seeing the success of the Rotunda is awesome in that it does help us understand that when we look at a space that is probably somewhat neglected but has some terrific architecture, to imagine the possibilities. For example, on Hudson, there is a beautiful synagogue that the community is working very hard to turn into a cultural center. So we do have the seeds of those kinds of things just starting here.
And you have set up this season to add kind of a voice like a Gina, for example, from Philadelphia coming in to talk to us here. So a voice from a different place along with local voices as well, kind of pairing them up. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've made a strategic effort to bring in expertise, knowing that there's things in Rochester that we need and want, and finding those people that are doing it outside of here, having success. And then, of course, to tie that conversation to our local context, because the speaker is visiting and is not fully aware of the things that we have here, bringing in a person that would pair with them and help to focus the conversation on local issues is just a great way to share that information.
So, Helen, let me turn to you then and just ask you, you know, as you think about what Gina is doing there and you think about what's happening here in Rochester, tell us about some of the work that you do here in this community.
Well, part of what we've been working on over the past several years as a group of volunteers has an initiative called Our City, and it's over behind the Rochester Public Market. It's the GP 4-H neighborhood, Garson, Peck, 4th, and Hayward. And those neighbors are really interested in trying to find a way to revitalize the neighborhood, not necessarily through just artist residency, but a creative entrepreneurial program where you could actually live in the space, have a business downstairs and have your home ownership upstairs, and have those people, as well as Gina's program with the artist residency, give back to the community.
And how far along are we on that kind of planning?
We're just in the infant stages now. We've been working with the design center. This is a really great opportunity for us to have a workshop with Gina when she comes in and kind of pick her brain about how the next steps should go.
All right. So, Gina, you know, we've been talking about your work for the Rotunda, but you're also the director of the 40th Street Artist in Residence Program. So tell us how that works.
So the way that all of this works, actually, is there's an office at Penn called Facilities and Real Estate. And so they, you know, obviously they buy buildings, they sell buildings, they, you know, create new spaces, they do all sorts of things like this. And what they tend to do is, of course, open classroom spaces, retail, housing, dorms, things like that. But there's a small group of buildings in their portfolio that is just sort of left to me, I guess. And what that entails is, you know, the Rotunda, of course, and then the 48th Street Artist in Residence Program. So, and we just call it AIR for short. And so with that, we have two houses a block away from the Rotunda, relatively modest houses. In one of them, we just use the first floor, and the other two floors are apartments that have nothing to do with us, and the university gets, rent from those tenants. And then in the other space, we have three floors. And so they're just these old Victorian twin houses where we have six studios for visual artists who have a strong connection to the neighborhood, and then we have a modest gallery space as well. And the way that it works is they get a year of free studio space in exchange for works of community outreach. And what we find is that they usually are already involved in the neighborhood. These are artists who are considered emerging, which in my definition could be anyone. We've had people from, you know, all ages, all races, all gender identities, anything, really reflecting the diversity of our neighborhood. And they, and you know, anyone can apply, and we ask them about their connection to the neighborhood, their idea of community outreach, why they need a studio at this time in their lives. And so it really helps us paint a picture of who these people are. So the work that they do, the community outreach work that they do, really varies, and they really determine it. We go places that we are wanted. So, you know, if we know of a school that really wants an artist to come in and do some workshops, then we connect with that school or a prison or a hospital or, you know, anywhere. It's again mutually beneficial. You know, the artists get the studio space, our partners get free programming, and then the university gives us a small stipend for these artists to cover their outreach supplies.
And how long are they in residence?
So that's a year.
1 year, okay. And yeah. So, Helen, potentially the roughly the same kind of model here.
Absolutely. One thing that we did accomplish over the past year was Conifer redid the Corpus Christi School and opened it up to artists for their first rental, first options to move into the community. So we started with the community artists, but we want to also, as I said, broaden it beyond that to creative entrepreneurs.
All right, listeners, I'd love to hear from you this hour as we continue our conversation with our guests. How do you view the role of the arts in revitalizing neighborhoods, providing opportunity? How do you feel about some of what you're hearing from Philadelphia and how it compares to what might be here in Rochester? We're talking on the phone to Gina Renzi, the executive director of the Rotunda in West Philadelphia and director of the 40th Street Artist in Residence Program. That's AIR. It's known as Airspace there. And you just heard Helen Hogan talking about, you know, in some ways how that could be a model for what's happening in Rochester. Maria Fergiuelli is interim executive director for the Community Design Center of Rochester. They are bringing Gina Renzi in next week. And you can get tickets at cdcrochester.org, if I remember that correctly. There you go. It's a week from tonight. So it's call the program and let us know what you think. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. On Twitter, Brian writes and says, I question whether Rochester's NIMBY attitude would let this happen. NIMBY, not in my backyard. He says, my advice, might have to move to Philly. So let me start with our guests in studio. Maria, Brian's a little cynical about whether we could see these kinds of things, whether it's the Rotunda, Airspace, happening here, because he says, and I'd love to hear, Brian, if you're listening, tell me a little bit more about why you think NIMBY comes into play here. But what do you think, Maria?
Well, if we all feel that way, then we'd have nothing in our backyard. So I think it's critically important that we start to recognize the importance that the people in their communities creating their space and asking for and even creating programming. I think part of my research in the Rotunda indicated this, that the space was used by a variety of people. They could be mm-hmm. people in the audience, as they can become performers or presenters. So, yeah, if we stick to that, not in my backyard, we'll never have anything.
Well, and Helen, first of all, just your thoughts on what Brian is saying there. What do you think?
Well, I think that when you look at a location where you're going to ask people to move into an area that's not quite developed, you are opening the opportunity to give people a chance to start to recreate a neighborhood. So when that happens, it really has to be a action that people see, because most people are going to, in some cases, will say, not in my backyard. But I think once you start that, it generates excitement and an awareness of how it can really be a benefit to the community.
Okay. And Gina, have you experienced any kind of pushback, any NIMBYism around the Rotunda and Airspace in West Philadelphia?
Not so much like what we're talking about, but, you know, we're talking about two cities that have a lot in common but also have evolved a little bit differently. We have a big city government here that a lot of times we don't connect with, or maybe I should say doesn't connect with us as much as we would like. And a lot of people, you know, really have this, and I think this is pretty much everywhere actually, have this strong, you know, sort of DIY, do-it-yourself kind of ethic. And we have artists everywhere, you know, and I think that that's something I think everyone needs to realize. There are already, you know, cooperative houses and, you know, loft spaces that artists take up residence in, whether it's just their studios or they're living in or whatever. Artists are often asked to, I think, work different kinds of jobs, and maybe people don't always understand that every other person you meet is probably an artist of some kind. And I think sometimes we need to redefine what art itself is. You know, we have a lot of cultural groups, and there are arts that they bring to us that maybe someone wouldn't think is necessarily part of the performing arts. And so you sort of mix all that together, it's already in our backyard. So I can't speak about Rochester, but I can say here that's a very sort of present idea. And the way that the Rotunda works is I curate very few shows and events. It's mostly people coming to me with an idea, and then we figure out what they need, whether they need some programming funding to pay their performers, or they need technical assistance or marketing ideas or things like that. So my job is really to kind of keep all that running smoothly, but it's not my voice that is supposed to be heard. It's not the Gina show. It's all of these other people. So I would venture to guess that that already exists in Rochester. So I'm a little confused about the NIMBY thing, but
okay.
I'm learning.
Well, sure. And we all are. And listeners, jump into the conversation at 844-295-TALK. Arthur in Rochester, first up. Go ahead, Arthur.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Go ahead, Arthur.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
All right. So I am in the process of opening a similar space in Rochester in the 19th Ward. And we've got a large warehouse building. And, you know, we're starting kind of from scratch, like building it up. And so we have all the design process done and all the permits ready to go. The thing that I'm running up against now is funding. And I was wondering if the guests had any suggestions as to places that, you know, you could look for funding of art spaces, specifically like the build-out budgets.
Well, Arthur, stay on the line. I'll start with Maria Fergiuelli first. Just, I mean, anything come to mind for you in that situation?
Not right off the top of my head, but certainly reaching out to the city government and various organizations that would be interested in urban projects like this. But I'm new in this job, so I'm not familiar with all the players.
Okay, Helen, what do you think?
I don't know. I think maybe Gina, you might have some suggestions in terms of how funding works with your facility.
Well, I think that you know, one thing we find these days is that funding comes from a bunch of different sources. You know, people do online campaigns all the time and all that kind of stuff. But we've been really fortunate in that most of our funding comes from a university and different departments within that university. So we find that, you know, if there's an event or a series of events that touches upon something that a certain department at Penn teaches and you know, purports to teach and open up to members of the community, then we say, hey, well, we already have that program. How about you give us some cash? And that works. As far as sort of startup costs for a space, I'm not sure, just not knowing Rochester well enough yet. But I know that in Philly we have groups like the Community Design Collaborative, who are architects and designers and people like that who advise people. I would also go to the website of the Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, that they can usually advise you on the phone about different things, you know, as far as if you want to start up a nonprofit or an LLC that runs your space, because then maybe it's easier to take in money that way. It's kind of hard to know.
I've already established the space as an S Corp.
Okay, good.
So we're going to be going on that way.
Well, and Arthur, Stephen on Twitter writes to us, listening right now. He says, where in the ward is Arthur's space? I'd love to pitch in.
There you go.
Oh, cool. So it's the former Food Link warehouse on Exchange Street.
Okay. And ultimately, again, before I let you go, Arthur, what is your vision? What's the best case scenario for what that space becomes?
Well, the vision as it stands right now is that we're going to have it be like a multi-use community space, sort of in the mold of a Village Gate, but with less retail. So there'll be some small businesses moving in and utilizing it, as well as an event art space with a tea house service instead of a bar, and then collective artist workspaces up on the third floor. So it's hopefully going to be a dynamic art space in the city.
Arthur, have you set up anything online for people to get in touch with you yet?
Yeah, if you check out therefineryrochester.com, it's the website for the entire complex. And then from there, you can get in touch with everyone in charge.
Well, good luck to you. Thanks for taking the time to call the program. It's just one example of the many interesting things going on. So, Stephen, I hope that was an answer for you on Arthur Space. Here's an email from Mark. And Mark just says, Evan, it sounds like a lot of really neat things are happening in Rochester, but they're happening in different places. And it sounds like in West Philadelphia, the place that your guest is talking about put everything under one roof. Is that a fair way to look at it? I don't know. I mean, Gina, I assume the Rotunda is not the only place where the art scene is happening in West Philadelphia.
Definitely not. So there are about 2,500 arts organizations in Philadelphia, and I'm not sure off the top of my head if that is just the city proper or not, but it's a number that I read recently. And as far as I'm aware, that's probably just sort of groups who have registered with our cultural alliance here, who keeps that kind of data. So there are probably lots and lots more. There's actually a similar space to ours. It's in an old church, and it's about maybe 9 blocks from our space, where they have a synagogue, which is the first synagogue in West Philly in about 50 years, and then several Christian groups, as well as 2 theater spaces, and there's a concert promoter who uses the space for shows. We have we even have an anarchist community center nearby. We have a lot of different groups all over the place. But again, we have, you know, a lot of other strong community groups, civic associations. Block captains play a huge role in West Philly, especially more so than in other parts of Philly, and they connect to arts programming. I've been mentioning University of Pennsylvania, but it actually is right next door to Drexel University, which is a large university as well. It's actually where I went, and they recently established a community center at the university that has not just arts programming, but computer literacy classes and dinners and things like that. So there's actually a lot going on, and people really sort of hop from space to space a lot. And we work with CDCs and groups like that as well. So it's way more than just, you know, sort of art for art's sake. I mean, this is really community arts. This is art for social change. So a lot of different groups jump on board because they see different roles for themselves.
Listeners, if you're just jumping into the conversation, you're hearing Gina Renzi, who is the executive director of the Rotunda in West Philadelphia. It's the rotunda.org to kind of get a look at the space and learn more about what she's talking about. It's a building that was built in 1911. It was a former Christian Science church, beautiful building that University of Penn purchased in the mid to late 90s and turned it into this remarkable art space where there's 300 events a year of really a lot of different sizes and a lot of different forms, from spoken word, theater, live music, all kinds of different things. And the question is, you know, looking at Rochester, maybe you don't create an exact replica of the Rotunda, but what can we learn from that kind of success? And the broader question that the Community Design Center is asking is, what is the role of arts in, you know, sort of embedding the arts in neighborhoods where they might be needed to revitalize neighborhoods? You heard Helen Hogan talking about the GP4H neighborhood and what might spark some progress, some development there. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll continue the conversation. If you want to call the program toll-free, where do you think the arts are needed most in Rochester? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can find me on Twitter, at Evan Dawson. Producer Megan Mack is there as well. Megan is at M Mac Media, and we're talking to Gina Renzi from the Rotunda in West Philly. Maria Fergiuelli is the interim executive director for the Community Design Center of Rochester, and Helen Hogan is here, who is a marketing and communication specialist. Your company is H Squared. Tell me about it just real briefly. Make sure I've got that right, Helen.
That's correct. I do contract. I've done city contracts and neighborhood development, as well as private and advertising contracts.
And all of the people on the program today, well, you can hear them and meet them a week from tonight. It's the first in the 2017 Design Center series on reshaping Rochester. So Gina's going to be here as well. They're talking about embedding the arts. That's a week from tonight, starting at 7 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium. Check out cdcrochester.org for more on that. We'll get back to your comments and questions and continue the conversation after our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with Andrea Hickerson, an RIT journalism professor who took the time to spend 2 weeks with the human rights delegation last year in Iraqi Kurdistan. What she learned on the ground, she translated into a piece for the Democrat and Chronicle, an op-ed that talked about the power and the problems related to oil. We'll talk to her next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I mentioned a little bit earlier this hour that a listener named Brian on Twitter had raised the issue of NIMBY, Not in My Backyard, saying he questions whether Rochester would support something like the Rotunda or maybe even airspace, that kind of a thing, an artist-in-residence space. He's saying that NIMBY has kind of reared its head here. And I think the panelists were trying to get their heads around exactly what he might have meant, but producer Megan Mack raises this for us, and Megan sent along this note. She says, there was a group of people a couple of years ago trying to open a theater space in the Monroe Avenue area, and neighbors pushed back for several reasons, parking and concerns about kids drinking in the area. But to some of the artists and some of the people involved in planning, it felt like a NIMBY situation. It was being characterized as a bar, but it was really meant to be a training and performance space. Bottom line is, I think a lot of people involved with that just felt like there might have been misunderstandings about what the intentions were, what the results would be. So a lot of well-meaning people might have simply disagreed about what the possible outcomes would be. Marie, I don't know if you remember anything about that, but maybe that's kind of where Brian's going, where you hear, okay, the Rotunda is going to do 300 events a year if Rochester has a space, or maybe it's an artist training space or a theater training space, but it sounds like, well, that's just going to be a bunch of people partying and having a bar. That may be where the NIMBY issue could come in.
Right.
Yeah. And Gina, have you had, for 300 events a year there, do you have people saying, well, you know, that at times it feels a little raucous or disruptive to the neighborhood?
We have had that. We've had that with both programs. We've had very little of it, to be honest. And part of the reason is just the nature of our buildings. They're soundproofed, I guess, a little bit better. The Rotunda itself is set back from the street a bit. So I guess we got lucky in that. But also, you know, communication with our neighbors right around us. We're in a different kind of spot, though. I mean, we are literally one block off of the, or not one block, but we are literally across the street from what is considered the official end of Penn's campus, even though, Penn students and professors go way beyond that. So we're in an area with, you know, a lot of foot traffic, a lot of noise already, not next to any dorms or anything like that. But, you know, right next to the Rotunda is a fraternity on one side, and on the other side is a movie theater. So we're lucky in that. With air, we're along a row of houses that are, you know, divided into apartments. And so there have been times when we've had an event in our gallery space in one of the buildings, and, you know, tenants next door or upstairs have been upset by the noise, and we've always addressed it, and we've actually adjusted our programming accordingly, you know, not going past a certain time, not using amplified sound, just using headphones with sound displays and things like that. So we've taken that kind of thing into consideration. But I've experienced, just as a neighbor, because I not only work in this neighborhood, but I live in this neighborhood, I've experienced, you know, I've gone to some zoning meetings where people have tried to start a space similar to what you're talking about, and neighbors have talked about, noise and parking and things like that. And I feel like that kind of turns up everywhere. And with good community outreach and with, you know, closing your windows and some common sense, you can really mitigate a lot of that.
Yeah, I don't know that there's ever been a significant project in any community that was met with zero complaints or concerns
right.
about anybody, about
exactly.
the impacts. But I think what Gina's just talking about is respect and outreach. But let me grab John on the phone in Rochester to come into the conversation now. Go ahead, John.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I think, you know, our issue, we were trying to open up an improv training center, which would be more like a theater. And we were trying to do mostly classes, but there would have been some performances. And I think that we were met with a number of different things. I think the first thing was just trying to find space, in a place where we could offer shows in a $15 to $20 price range, and finding landlords, you know, that would work with us. In many of these instances, we found places that were $2 to $3 a square foot. They wanted 10 to 20 year leases, and it just made our business model, you know, almost impossible in order to offer something to the public in terms of classes and in terms of entertainment that was affordable. Over the last 3 years, we've looked at spaces where the landlords would have them, they've sat vacant for 3 years, and we've gone back to the same space over and over again, where we could have been paying them any kind of rent, and they've just chosen to have them sit vacant. So even getting into a space is one challenge.
an entertainment license, which I think has been rectified by the city. They've worked with smaller theaters, and that's been a positive. But we also met with neighbors complaining about parking on the Monroe Avenue neighborhood. The irony was it was about five or six residents, and one of those residents that was complaining about potential parking, if you open a theater, I believe in Rochester, you have to have one parking space for every two seats, and that seemed a little crazy. But even one of the residents that was complaining about it had turned her parents' old home into five or six apartments, which was taking up five or six parking spots, and she was complaining about the parking from a theater or a training center. So for us, there were all kinds of numerous reasons that made it a barrier for us, but we're still plugging away.
Well, John, hold on for one second, because I got to say, I had not heard that before in terms of one parking space for every two seats. We should check to see if that's still the case, because that would be sort of an anachronism, a relic of the old addicted to the car model. And Rochester, frankly, has been moving in a different direction in recent years, not just under the lovely Warren administration, but I think in recent years in general, there's been a movement in a different direction. But we'll see if that's still the case, because that does seem to be an anachronism.
Yeah. From what I understand, there's a radius around, you know, within the inner city of Rochester. But once you get beyond that, then it does go to, I believe it's one parking space for every two seats.
And let me also say, if I recognize the voice, John is John Forrest Thompson, who's one of the really, really great comedy minds and performers and writers in Rochester. And John, what I had never heard from you before, I did not know that there was an effort afoot to create an improv training sort of an academy. I mean, what would be your vision if you could get this green-lighted? Is that still something you'd want to do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're still trying, and there's still a group of us that are looking for space. We had a space in the Hungerford building for a few years, and we kind of ran into complaints from neighbors and more or less outgrew our space. But yeah, we're definitely still trying to make that happen. And really, it would be about 75% training and classes and workshops, and then about 25% entertainment, where we would actually have those shows. Many of them would be for people that had completed classes. It would be their graduation shows, and we'd like to have some house teams to kind of show off the best of our program. You know, I know that Photo City Improv gave it a shot, but they were more of the old archaic comedy store type model, where they're charging you a two-drink minimum, and, you know, it costs you $40-$50, you know, for a night out of entertainment. And it just didn't fit with the improv model, again, where we wanted, you know, sometimes $8 to $10 a show, you know, $15 to $20 for the premium shows. And really, the models that you have in Chicago that are Second City and Improv Olympic and Annoyance, it becomes a clubhouse for the local comedians and writers. So if you create a space for them to go where they can hang out and meet and interact and have, they'll buy your food and they'll buy your drinks. But again, if you create a clubhouse for them to come and congregate, they will come. But when you create a place that's, like I said, a two-drink minimum where people are just kind of in or out, that's not the kind of model that we were going for, and I think that's what's misunderstood about most of the comedy clubs here in Rochester. For some people, it works,
yeah.
But for our model, that wasn't what we were going for.
Well, thanks for calling, John. It's great to hear from you, and it's something I was not aware of, so let's talk about it on a different day. Well, that's a whole separate conversation.
Thank you for your kind words and always supporting our art form.
You got to thank you. That's John Forrest Thompson calling, and so before I get back to your phone calls, because now the phones are blowing up, let me just ask our guests. I'll start with Maria. You know, I think what John is describing is the effort that a lot of communities have at making sure, whether it's a development, a restaurant, a retail space, arts, it's the right fit in the right neighborhood. But he's also describing some of these rules that to me seem a little outdated on rules on parking and whatnot. Do you think we're moving in a different direction with a design idea and an ethic for this community that also cares about, and some people roll their eyes, but I'm just going to keep using the term, walkability, pedestrian access, all of those things. I mean, are we moving in that direction?
I think we are, not as quickly as other places, but certainly we understand that urban spaces are about walkability, and we're starting to differentiate spaces where we have a whole lot of traffic. It's not conducive to creating the kinds of environments that people enjoy, sitting on the sidewalk enjoying a lunch or a dinner, or walking out of one place and into another. So definitely moving there. Certainly wish it was faster, but okay. It's coming.
Helen, you wish we were moving more quickly in that direction?
Well, I can speak directly to that because I sit on the City Planning Commission.
Yeah.
And our formula for some of the restaurants, whether it's sit-down or walk-in or full-size restaurants or retail, are all different. But I do know that we're moving in a better direction. We're looking at formulas that include bike racks, buses, walkability to add to those parking spaces so they're taken care of when we look at the different developments. And I think that the Planning Commission and the city also knows that we want walkable communities, so we need to push further on that.
And Gina, I'll just ask you briefly before I go back to our loaded phones, how do you view walkability and the importance of access to, for example, just the rotunda in West Philly?
It's absolutely critical to it. And I've never owned a car, so I walk everywhere. I walk 15 blocks to work and 15 blocks home. It's incredibly important.
Well, that's something to follow that John gave us a lot to think about there. Let's keep moving here. Down to Perry we go, and this is Michael. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, how you doing in
good,
there?
Good, very good.
This is a very interesting conversation. I'm a successful cartoonist. I work all over the state of New York, and people know me coming down the street. But I was told by somebody that I felt pretty darn good about that art has no value.
Ugh.
And I looked at him. I said, if it weren't for art, we couldn't have ceiling tiles or nails or pencils or fences, because anyone who's going to invest in making those things needs to see a drawing. And he said, I don't believe in that. Well, I think going beyond that, we need to make a call to attract all-encompassing artists. Right now, not only do I do cartooning, but I'm an inventor. I heard that Bill Gates is putting up $1 billion to seed about 24 companies or so to come up with cheap, renewable energy. And artists are quite often all-encompassing, and I happen to be right on top of that, and I think people should have a forum to bring together these people that have these ideas and attract that kind of money.
Well, Michael, thank you for the phone call. When you said that you encountered someone who told you that that they think art has no value, I think I heard Gina Renzi actually recoil.
Yeah.
So why don't you address, because Gina, the person who said that to Michael, I'm sure there are people listening right now who find art to be more, they would say, more frivolous or maybe shouldn't be prioritized. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
I think there are a few different ways, you know, and people respond to different things. People learn in different ways. So for people who like studies, you know, there have been numerous studies. Michigan State University is one that comes to mind, where they talk about how children excel when they have access to the arts, how empathy is and creativity are fostered through the arts, and how we pass down cultural traditions, you know, through the arts. And something I said earlier, I think that art is all around us, but we might not necessarily call it art. So I think what Michael said is absolutely, you know, right. You wouldn't have ceiling tiles, pencils, things like that. I also understand when people talk about that, because we have so many issues. You know, here in Philly, and I know it's all around the country, you know, we have schools that are in, you know, crises. We have, you know, people living below the poverty level. You know, we have all sorts of issues, so I get that. But I don't think that, but I think that art has a place in all of that. And I think that if you look at what happens to schools and areas without art, you can see a big difference compared to places that do have art. And again, you know, you just have to kind of look at studies that have already talked about this and have been talking about this for ages. And you also have to look at some big cities around the world and you know, not even such big cities, but places where there are huge advocates and have turned things that weren't necessarily considered art into art. One that I just want to plug very quickly is the Mural Arts Program of Philadelphia. It started simply as a way to cover up graffiti, unwanted graffiti on buildings, and it's turned into a city office that employs over 300 artists over the course of a year, and they create murals. They work in prisons and schools. They have all sorts of after-school programs. And it's now an integral part of the way the city addresses art. And you can see the students excelling because of it. So I don't want to go on and on, but I think you know where I stand on this.
Well, and I will ask our listeners who are on the phones, I'm going to try to get as many phone calls in as we can for the rest of the hour. Try to keep it as tight as you can because a lot of people want to weigh in. Ellen in Fairport wants to add to what she just heard. Go ahead, Ellen.
Well, thank you. It's hard to turn the radio off and listen to these awesome conversations at the same time. I'm a curriculum developer. I run a brain center and teach a graduate course at St. John Fisher called Lead Innovation with the Brain and Mind. I would love to zero in on the notions that have been raised so well about STEAM and the need for that to help us reimagine our curriculum that we teach with the brain and mind. For example, my classes run on the notion of you look at a problem and then you solve it with your multiple intelligences. We each come with at least 8. I teach at the adult level. It can be done. But the people that have mentioned today how much we need arts are covering a central part of a major question about what does knowledge consist of. And if it consists of multiple intelligences, which we all come with, then you take a look at anything with arts as being one of those intelligences in order to come up with a solution that's much more related to the human brain. So this is a moment to reimagine what does curriculum development look like with things like the arts at the center. And so I so advocate what these people are coming up with and think it's an opportunity for all of us to rethink what it means to know something and to use content to solve problems and come up with innovations.
Ellen, thank you for that. What it means to know something. I mean, I want to take Ellen's class now. I want to sit in and think about this, but I think it's hard to argue Ellen's point about the value of art in that way, though, and the what it does to our brain and communities without art, if you just think about that. Anne in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Anne. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I just want to say I live in the GP4H neighborhood on Peck Street, and Helen and her band of volunteers has worked with us before, so I look forward to seeing her next week and seeing what, you know, what kind of transformative ideas can be brought to our neighborhood. We're kind of a small inner-city type residential area surrounded by the Hungerford Building, Market View Heights, and so on. So we'll be looking forward to seeing Helen next week and kind of getting an idea of how we might be do some creative activity in our neighborhood.
Thank you, Anne. Helen, she sounds like she's excited there.
No, I think it's great. The GP4H group has been a volunteer group for many, many years, and they've had a lot of developments around them. And they're really looking forward to, as we are, to developing some kind of neighborhood revitalization through creative entrepreneurs.
I'm looking at the schedule here because time is running short, and I just can't even get through all of the comments that have come in via email and phone. So if I didn't get you, you can come out a week from tonight. You can meet Gina Renzi, who's the executive director of the Rotunda. She's coming as the first speaker in the Reshaping Rochester series from the Community Design Center. Their 2017 season is under the banner Our City, Ourselves, Loving Where We Live, and Gina's going to be talking about embedding the arts where they are needed and revitalizing a neighborhood. Real quick here, Maria Fergiuelli, looking at the rest of the list, the season's going to start to go quickly starting next week, so what else is on the list there?
Well, we have some great speakers coming up. We have Maurice Cox coming in February 9th, and David Vigil with Janatul Rahman about urban agriculture. That is our March speaker. Rebecca Morley, A Healthy Pulse, on April 5th. And our capstone event is our end-of-series luncheon with Kim White from the River City Company in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And that is a luncheon on May 9th. And the whole series is brought to us by Home Leasing, who is our major sponsor.
CDCRochester.org. And again, if these subjects are interesting to you, embedding the arts where they're needed most, designing Detroit, growing food, jobs, and engagement, the benefits of urban agriculture, planning for healthy neighborhoods, and starting with the river. Rochester forgets the river sometimes. Gina Renzi, we've really enjoyed the conversation. We'll see you in Rochester next week, and congratulations with all the success at the Rotunda and all the work you're doing in West Philadelphia.
Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, really, really interesting stuff. And again, listeners, if you didn't get through, I tried to get as many as you if we could. There's always so much interest in what CDC is doing. It's a fun series. And I will just say, Megan Mack and I took a look at the list of all the series and events, and we said, we kind of like them all, so we're going to ask you to keep coming back here, Maria. So
thank you so much.
We'll see you as the weeks go on here with the season that starts next week. Our thanks as well to Helen Hogan.
Thank you.
Have fun next week as well. Thank you so much for coming in here. All right, short break, much more connection straight ahead.